Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So if one were to try to think of topics that you could have in your back pocket and just kind of wheel out at a dinner party, if your objective was to bore the other person out of the conversation, I think you could do worse than the concept of corporate debt and the debt market. Even though there is, you know, the bond market is a huge source of finance, it's one of those fields that feels very hard to actually get excited about. Mortgages, maybe the same thing could be said about them. We all know that these are very important to know how the mortgage market works and how our pensions operate, but you know, getting into that, the nitty-gritty of how it operates is sometimes really challenging. One of the advances in the world of the debt market in recent years, we talked about social impact bonds and outcomes funds, has been the emergence of two securities, the sustainability-linked bond and the sustainability-linked loan, together called the SLB and the SLL. We talked about how impact bonds were developed and introduced as this mechanism allowing governments and private bodies to collaborate on tackling often entrenched social issues where there just wasn't enough government capital available. And the debt market has also wheeled out some imaginative thinking. The challenges here have been documented in that there is actually a sort of a commonality here or a parallel between social impact bonds, whereby you have these incentives to maybe hit the numbers rather than deliver the desired change. And that challenge of chasing the KPI rather than chasing the desired transformation on a population or on a problem is I think a serious issue. The SLL market has seen participation from traditional lenders, and the SLB market also has this quite vibrant sovereign side in which a government or a country will raise money, like we see here in Israel with the impact bond, but their rate of return that they offer is dependent upon them hitting their these targets, so that if they perform better, more sustainably, they'll pay a lower rate of interest. So it's creating an incentive for the government to hit its target. But it always makes me wonder, on the flip side, that means that if the sustainability target is achieved, there's a lower rate of return for investors, because the borrower has a lower rate of interest. So I'm interested to know about the mechanics of the SLB and SLL market and what solutions and thoughts have gone into that concept of how to get these incentives aligned so that both sides of the equation are batting on a change that's going to be beneficial for the world and not just for their own narrow interests. Over to you, Herman and Corin.
You know, Herman, I was thinking about how we usually talk about things that are immediately flashy. Artificial intelligence, space travel, radical medical breakthroughs. But today, our housemate Daniel sent us a prompt that on the surface sounds like the kind of thing you would use to fall asleep. Corporate debt. Specifically, the mechanics of sustainability-linked bonds and loans.
Herman Poppleberry at your service, and Corin, I have to disagree with you right out of the gate. I know corporate debt sounds like a sedative, but when you look at how the world actually moves, the bond market is the engine room. It is where the real power lies. If you want to change how a global corporation behaves, you do not talk to their marketing department. You talk to the people who manage their debt. And Daniel is hitting on a really profound tension here. How do you use the cold, hard logic of finance to actually fix the planet?
It is a great question. Daniel was asking about the alignment of incentives, because, if you think about it, the traditional model of a sustainability-linked bond, or an SLB, has this weird paradox. If the company hits its environmental goals, the interest rate they pay to investors often goes down. So, the investor actually makes less money if the company succeeds in being green. That seems like a total misalignment of interests, right? Why would an investor want to be paid less for a successful outcome?
Exactly. That is the fundamental riddle of the SLB market. We have seen this market grow from almost nothing in 2019 to a cumulative total of over $6 trillion by early 2025. But that tension, the idea that an investor is essentially betting against a company's sustainability progress if they want a higher yield, that is what we need to deconstruct.
Well, before we get into the why of it all, let's make sure we are clear on the what. For those who might be mixing this up with green bonds, because that is a common point of confusion, how are these different? Because green bonds have been around for a while, right?
Right. Think of it this way. A green bond is what we call a use of proceeds instrument. If a company issues a green bond, they are saying, I am borrowing $100 million, and I promise to spend every cent of that money on building a wind farm or a solar array. The focus is on the project.
Okay, so it is like a restricted allowance. You can have the money, but only if you buy vegetables with it.
Exactly. But sustainability-linked bonds, or SLBs, and their cousins, sustainability-linked loans, or SLLs, are different. They are behavior-based. The company can spend the money on whatever they want, general corporate purposes, payroll, research, and development. But the interest rate on that debt is tied to whether the company hits specific performance targets or KPIs. It is not about what you spend the money on, it is about who you are as a company and whether you are meeting your climate or social goals.
So, it is more like a fitness tracker for a corporation. We will give you a better interest rate if you can prove your cholesterol dropped by 10% by next year.
That is a perfect analogy, and that brings us back to Daniel's point. In a traditional SLB, there is often a step-down mechanism. If the company hits its target, the interest rate drops by, say, 25 basis points. If you are an investor, you are sitting there thinking, wait a minute, I want that extra 0.25%. If this company actually reduces its carbon emissions, I lose money.
It feels almost cynical. It is like the market is saying, we will pay you a premium for failure. So, how do we solve that? How do we align these incentives so that the investor actually wants the company to succeed?
This is where we have to look at the broader picture of risk. Because investors are not just looking at the yield on a single bond in a vacuum, they are looking at the long-term viability of the company they are lending to. If a company fails to hit its sustainability targets, that is often a signal that they are ill-prepared for the future. They might face carbon taxes, regulatory fines, or their assets might become stranded, meaning they are no longer profitable because of environmental shifts.
So, you are saying the lower interest rate is basically a de-risking premium? If the company hits its goals, it is a safer company to lend to, and therefore deserves a lower interest rate, just like a person with a higher credit score gets a better mortgage rate?
Precisely. From a sophisticated investor's perspective, a company that meets its transition targets is a more resilient company. They are less likely to default in 10 years. So, while you might lose a few basis points of interest in the short term, you are protecting the principal of your investment in the long term. But you are right to be skeptical. That noble explanation does not always satisfy the quarterly profit demands of a hedge fund manager.
Right. And that is why we are seeing some really interesting innovations in how these deals are structured to address Daniel's point about narrow interests versus global change. One of the biggest shifts I have noticed is the move towards step-up. Only structures.
Oh, the step up is a huge part of the solution. Instead of the interest rate going down if you succeed, the interest rate stays the same if you succeed, but it goes up if you fail.
That feels much more like a penalty for bad behavior than a reward for good behavior. Does that actually fix the incentive problem for the investor?
It does, because it removes the betting on failure aspect. The investor is happy with the baseline rate. They are not hoping the company fails just to get a bonus. They are providing capital at a fair price, with a built-in protection if the company becomes riskier by failing to meet its sustainability goals. It aligns the interests because both parties now want to avoid the penalty. The company wants to avoid paying more, and the investor wants a stable, non-risky borrower.
But wait, if the investor gets more money when the company fails, aren't they still technically incentivized for the company to fail?
In a narrow, short-term sense, yes. But again, that failure usually comes with a host of other problems for the company. If a massive utility company fails to transition to renewables and has to pay a step up on its bonds, its stock price might crater, or its overall credit rating might be downgraded. Most bondholders also hold the company's stock or other debt. They do not want the company to be in trouble. The step up is more about ensuring the investor is compensated for the increased risk of holding debt in a company that is lagging behind.
I see. It is about pricing the risk accurately. But let's talk about the global change, part of Daniel's question. Because one of the biggest criticisms of this whole market is greenwashing. If a company sets a really easy target, something they were going to do anyway, then the whole incentive structure is a sham. It is just a marketing exercise to get cheaper capital.
This is the materiality problem, and it is the biggest battleground in the debt markets right now. For an SLB to be legitimate, the targets, or KPIs, have to be ambitious and material. If a massive oil company issues a bond where the target is installing LED light bulbs in our corporate headquarters, everyone should laugh them out of the room. That is not material to their business model.
Right. It has to be something that actually hurts if they miss it, and something that actually matters for the planet. Like Scope 3 emissions, the emissions from their entire supply chain and the customers using their products. That is the hard stuff.
And that is where we see the most tension. Companies are often terrified of tying their interest rates to Scope 3 emissions because they cannot fully control them. It depends on their suppliers and their customers. But if they don't include Scope 3, are they really achieving beneficial global change, or are they just tidying up their own backyard while the neighborhood burns?
It is a massive challenge. I remember reading about a recent deal, I think it was with a major consumer goods company, where they actually linked the bond's performance to the diversity of their management team, as well as their carbon footprint. It shows how broad sustainability can be. But how do we ensure these targets are not just moving goalposts?
That is where third-party verification comes in. We have seen the rise of organizations like the Science-Based Targets Initiative, or SBTI. They act as the referees. And just this past June of 2025, the International Capital Market Association, or ICMA, updated their KPI registry to include much more rigorous standards for things like biodiversity and the circular economy. They look at a company's plan and say, yes, this goal is actually aligned with the Paris Agreement and the goal of limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees. Without that independent stamp of approval, investors are becoming much more hesitant to buy these bonds.
So, the market is maturing. It is moving from, take our word for it, to show us the data verified by an expert. But I want to go back to Daniel's point about the narrow interests. Even with verification, is there a way to make the incentive even more direct? I have heard about some structures where the penalty or the savings do not even go to the investor or the company.
Yes, this is one of the most exciting developments. It is called the charity toggle, or the offset mechanism. In some sustainability-linked loans, if the company misses its target, the extra interest they have to pay doesn't go to the bank. Instead, the company is required to donate that exact amount to a pre-approved environmental or social charity.
Now, that is fascinating. It completely removes the bank's incentive to hope for failure. The bank doesn't profit from the company's climate struggle. The money goes toward fixing the very problem the company failed to address.
Exactly. It turns the penalty into a direct contribution to global change. It is a brilliant way to align the spirit of the deal with the mechanics. And on the flip side, some deals allow for the interest savings to be reinvested directly into the company's green projects. So, instead of the company just keeping the money as profit, they are contractually obligated to plow those savings back into their sustainability transition.
That feels like a much more holistic approach. It addresses the narrow interest problem by literally taking the money off the table for the lenders and forcing it into the global change bucket. But Herman, how widespread is this? Are we talking about a tiny fraction of the market, or is this becoming the standard?
It is still growing. The charity toggle is more common in private loans, where you have a closer relationship between a company and a small group of banks. In the public bond market, where you have thousands of different investors, it is harder to coordinate. Most bond investors still want the step up to come to them as compensation for risk, but the conversation is changing. Investors are starting to realize that if they want to meet their own climate targets, because many of these pension funds and insurance companies have promised their own stakeholders they will be net zero, they need the companies they invest in to succeed.
That is an important point. The investors themselves are under pressure. If I am a pension fund and I have promised my members that my portfolio will be carbon neutral by 2050, I am not just looking for yield. I am looking for companies that will help me keep my promise. So, my narrow interest has actually expanded to include global change.
That is the ultimate alignment of incentives. When the investor's own survival or reputation depends on the borrower's sustainability, we are seeing portfolio decarbonization become a massive driver. If a bank has a huge loan book filled with brown assets, dirty energy, inefficient buildings, their own cost of capital might go up because they are seen as a risky institution. So, the bank is highly motivated to help its clients turn green, so the bank itself looks better to its own investors.
It is like a giant, interconnected web of accountability. But let's talk about the sovereign side of this, because this is something Daniel mentioned, and it is really unique. We are starting to see entire countries issue sustainability-linked bonds. Chile and Uruguay have been pioneers here.
The Uruguay deal is actually my favorite example of solving the incentive problem. Most SLBs have a step up. You pay more if you fail. But Uruguay issued a bond with a step down and a step up. If they exceed their climate goals, their interest rate goes down. If they miss them, it goes up.
Okay. But how did they get investors to agree to the step down? Why would an investor want to receive less money from a country just because that country protected its forests?
Because Uruguay coupled it with incredible transparency and a very high target. The investors agreed because they saw it as a sign of a highly stable, forward-thinking government. A country that is meeting its international climate obligations is a country that is likely to be economically stable and well-governed. It reduces the sovereign risk. And here is the kicker. The targets were tied to the Paris Agreement. In their latest 2025 report, Uruguay showed they were making great progress on forest preservation, though they were still a few percentage points short on their emissions intensity goals. It is a live experiment in accountability.
It's the macro version of the de-risking argument. If the world avoids 3 degrees of warming, every investor wins. But I can see the critics now, Herman. They would say, this is all just tinkering at the edges. A few basis points here or there isn't going to stop a company from drilling for oil if the oil price is $100 a barrel.
And the critics have a point. The financial incentive in an SLB is often quite small. Maybe 25 basis points, which is 0.25%. On a billion-dollar bond, that is $2.5 million a year. For a company with billions in revenue, that is a rounding error. It is not enough to change their entire business strategy on its own.
So, is it just theater, or is there a deeper mechanism at work?
It is about the signaling and the internal plumbing. When a company issues an SLB, they are not just signing a piece of paper. They are forcing their finance team to talk to their sustainability team. In many companies, those two departments never spoke to each other before. Now, the chief financial officer is saying to the head of sustainability, "If you don't hit these targets, my debt becomes more expensive, and I have to explain that to the board of directors."
Ah, so it is about internal accountability. It puts the sustainability targets right into the heart of the company's financial reporting. You can't just hide them in a glossy brochure anymore.
Exactly. It makes sustainability a board-level issue. If a company has to pay a step up, it is a public admission of failure. We saw this with Enel, the Italian energy giant. They issued the very first SLB back in 2019, but just a couple of years ago, they actually missed their energy intensity targets and had to pay that 25 basis point step up on 10 different bonds. That was a huge red flag to every other investor, every employee, and every customer. The reputational risk of missing an SLB target is often much, much larger than the actual financial penalty. It's the shame factor.
I love that. The shame factor as a financial instrument. It sounds very human, actually. We often think of markets as these cold, robotic things, but they are really just collections of people. And people don't like to be publicly called out for failing to do what they said they would do.
Exactly. And we are seeing this evolve even further. Some companies are now linking their executive compensation directly to the same KPIs that are in their sustainability-linked bonds. Now, you have a direct line from global change to the CEO's bank account. That is the ultimate incentive alignment. If the company hits its carbon targets, the interest rate on the debt goes down, and the CEO gets their bonus. If they miss, the debt gets expensive, and the CEO loses money.
That is a powerful combination. It takes it from a corporate commitment to a personal one. But let's look at the other side of the coin. What happens if the targets are too hard? We have seen some pushback lately, haven't we? Some companies are worried that they will be punished for things outside their control, like a global energy crisis or a war.
This is a real tension. If the targets are too easy, it is greenwashing. If they are too hard, companies won't issue the bonds. We saw a bit of a slowdown in the SLB market in 2025 because of this. New European labeling rules from ESMA made the standards much higher, and some companies got cold feet. But I actually think that is a good thing. It is a sign of a maturing market. We are moving past the hype phase and into the show me the results phase. In fact, for 2026, we expect SLB issuance to stay a bit subdued as the market digests these new, tougher rules.
It is like any new technology or financial product. You have that initial burst of enthusiasm, then a period of disillusionment where everyone realizes it is harder than it looks, and then hopefully, you settle into a productive, stable reality.
Right. And the productive reality we are moving toward involves much more standardized KPIs. Instead of every company making up its own targets, we are seeing industry standards emerge. If you are a cement company, there are three or four specific metrics that everyone agrees are the most important. That makes it easier for investors to compare different companies and decide who is actually doing the work.
So, for someone like Daniel, who's looking for evidence that these things can actually drive change, where should he be looking? Is there a smoking gun example of an SLB actually changing a company's behavior?
It is hard to find a single smoking gun because behavior change is gradual. But look at Enel again. Despite their recent step-up penalty, they have used SLBs to help increase their renewable capacity to over 70%. The bond provided the financial rails for the strategy they wanted to pursue. It locked them in.
It is about commitment devices. Like when you sign up for a marathon and tell all your friends. You were already thinking about running, but now that you have paid the entry fee and everyone is watching, you are much more likely to actually do the training.
That is exactly it. SLBs are a public commitment device for the corporate world, and for the investors, they are a way to put their money where their mouth is. If an investor says they care about ESG, environmental, social, and governance, but they only buy traditional bonds, they aren't really using their leverage. Buying an SLB is a way for an investor to say, I am willing to accept a slightly different risk profile to support your transition, but I am going to hold you accountable for it.
I think we should talk about the social side of this too, because it is not just about carbon. We are seeing sustainability linked mean things like gender pay gap reduction, worker safety, and access to medicine in developing countries.
That is a great point. Some of the most interesting deals are coming out of the pharmaceutical industry. There was a bond issued by a major pharma company that tied its interest rate to how many people in low-income countries receive their vaccines. That is a direct link between corporate debt and global health outcomes.
That feels much more tangible to most people than carbon intensity per $1 million of revenue. It's about lives saved. But the same incentive problems apply, right? Does the investor want fewer people to get vaccines so they get more interest?
In that case, the shame factor would be nuclear. Can you imagine a hedge fund manager going on television and saying, I'm really glad those children in that developing nation didn't get their shots because my yield went up by 10 basis points? They would be a pariah. The market knows this. These bonds are designed to be win-win or lose-lose. There is no win in being the beneficiary of a social or environmental failure in the 21st century.
It is a shift in the social license to operate. It used to be that a company's only job was to make money for its shareholders. Now, there is an understanding that if you destroy the environment or exploit your workers, you will eventually lose your ability to make money because the world will turn against you. The debt market is just starting to price that reality into the contracts.
And that is the most honest way to look at it. It is not about altruism. It is about enlightened self-interest. If the world burns, the bond market burns with it. So, aligning these incentives is not just a nice thing to do, it is a survival strategy for the financial system.
I think that is a really important takeaway. It is not that finance has suddenly found a conscience. It is that the risks have become so large that they can no longer be ignored.
Exactly. And for our listeners who are thinking about their own investments or their own companies, the lesson here is that transparency and materiality are everything. If you are looking at a green investment, don't just look at the label. Look at the KPIs. Are they hard? Are they verified? Is there a real penalty for failure?
It's about being a critical consumer of financial products. Just like you read the ingredients on a food label, you have to read the ingredients of a sustainability-linked bond.
And we are seeing more tools to help people do that. There are now second-party opinions from firms that specialize in evaluating these bonds. They provide a report that says, "We have looked at this deal, and we think the targets are ambitious," or, "We think this is a bit of a stretch." As a regular listener of My Weird Prompts, you might not be buying billion-dollar corporate bonds, but your pension fund or your insurance company almost certainly is. You have a right to ask them how they are evaluating these things.
That is a great practical takeaway. Ask the people who manage your money how they are ensuring that their sustainable investments are actually driving change, rather than just collecting a green label.
And look for those innovative structures we talked about. Look for the charity toggles. Look for the step up, structures that price risk accurately. Look for the companies that are linking this all the way down to executive pay. Those are the signs of a company and an investor that is actually serious.
You know, Herman, I started this episode thinking corporate debt was boring, but you have convinced me. It is like this secret lever that can move the entire world. It's just hidden behind a lot of jargon and spreadsheets.
That is the goal of the show, Corn. To peel back the jargon and see the mechanics underneath. And Daniel's prompt was a perfect example of how a technical question can lead to a really deep discussion about how we want our society to function.
It really does come down to that. How do we want to value success? Is it just the bottom line, or is it the bottom line plus the health of the planet and the fairness of our society? The debt market is trying to figure out how to do both at the same time.
It is a work in progress, but it is a vital one. We are essentially rewriting the rules of capitalism in real time, one bond contract at a time.
Well, on that note, I think we have given Daniel and our listeners a lot to chew on. Before we wrap up, I just want to say, if you are enjoying these deep dives into the weird and wonderful ways our world is changing, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. It genuinely helps other people find the show and keeps us going.
It really does. We love seeing the community grow. And remember, you can find all our past episodes. We are up to 503 now at myweirdprompts.com. There is a contact form there if you want to send us a prompt like Daniel did, or you can just browse the archive.
We have covered everything from the ethics of AI to the history of urban planning. So, if you like this one, there is plenty more to explore.
And a big thanks to Daniel for sending this one in. It was a great excuse for me to nerd out on basis points and sovereign risk.
You didn't need much of an excuse, Herman.
Guilty as charged.
Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. We will be back next time with another exploration of the prompts that make our world a little bit weirder and a lot more interesting.
Until next time, keep asking the hard questions.
See you then.
Yeah! This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.